You know, I was going to talk tonight just about how this path is one of getting rid of conditioning and concepts, getting rid of ideas, getting all kinds of ideas. But it's also about grace. You can feel God's grace or the grace of consciousness in this satsang if you can get into the chanting. You feel the presence of God, the presence of consciousness moving through us, through the chanting. And I know a lot of you get blissed out as soon as the chanting starts, but it really, really, really helps to participate, to get your human presence into the chanting, at least at the beginning. Get the power moving through you of consciousness. The grace of consciousness. Speak with the voice of consciousness, calling God's name. Because that's what we're doing over and over again, is calling God's name. God, 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 God. Then the silence comes. And the healing comes. But please try to participate in the chanting. It's so simple. The words are so simple. Even if you could become totally useless like me, you can think of those words. I want to do a little different thing today. I'm going to start with Nisargadatta as a baseline for what we're doing. There's several pages here, beginning on page 88 of Prior to Consciousness. This is the groundwork. This is what we're all about, except for the grace. He doesn't talk about the grace here. He talks about it in other books, but not in this one. He says, a murderer is loose. He has committed many murders, and the international police are after him, but are unable to catch him. That is like the traditional scriptures not being able to locate or find the absolute. It is beyond the grasp of the Vedas, the Puranas, etc., because it is not conceptual. The absolute is not conceptual. What you really are is not conceptual, cannot be grasped with the mind. This murderer is very proud to escape all the efforts of the police force. He is fearless. That he sits where the plans to catch him are discussed, and hence he cannot be caught. He's right here. He's you. No matter what you think, he's going to escape you. Because the mind can't grasp him, and he's listening. He's there where the plans are being made to capture him. Everyone has to die, so die as your true nature. Why die as a body? Never forget your true nature. It may not be acceptable to many, but it is a fact. If you must have an ambition, have the highest, so that at least while dying you will be the absolute. Decide that now firmly and with certainty and conviction. A tiger is coming at you. You know that when he attacks you, death is certain. So why die like a coward? Attack him and maybe he'll run away. But if the tiger is passing by, do not unnecessarily attack him. Only when absolutely necessary, jump on him. That's good advice. If you go to a zoo, don't attack the tiger behind the bar. God is great and Maya is vast. But what are you in the end? The mental modifications take you away from the self. Nobody wants to inquire about the self deeply and thoroughly. Everybody inquires on a superficial level. These are the people that dig shallow holes. They go from one discipline and one guru and one teaching to another. They really don't care about the self. They care about teachings, directions, ideas, knowledge, something to wrap themselves around. A book, discuss all the meanings and so forth. But it's so easy. You just look into yourself. And yet so difficult because it's not that exciting. The questioner says, my mind does not stay quiet. It goes here and there. And Maharaj says, with all these ramblings, you will be entertained, but you will not obtain knowledge. This is all spiritual entertainment because of the factual state of affairs is what you are, let me see, this is all spiritual entertainment because the factual state of affairs is what you are. You are without modification. In other words, if you're talking about anything but what you are, your true nature, it's entertainment. And that's what most people perceive. They talk about this. This is not on a psychological level. Psychological level, you talk about all kinds of things, repressions and denials and dreams and dream interpretations and working on the vasanas and okay, come on, Lakshmi. Jump. You don't get caught. Oh, she got caught again. Here, come. Oh, there you go. She's a critic now. She'll be back. Mind and all concepts are due to your primary concept, I am. Your parents and you are simultaneous concepts. Now, without trying to experience, what experience are you having? In other words, if we're deliberately trying to experience something like samadhi, that's what you're trying to do. But without trying to experience, what is your experience? And the questioner says, I am. Is this not a concept? There are concepts formed from concepts. It is a vast field of concepts. In other words, our life is a vast field of concepts, a network of thought that interpenetrates. One thought links to another. It's an infinite progression of ideas swirling around in our heads, ideas, thoughts, shoulds, oughtos, morality, concepts. I would like to be free of concepts, Maharaj. This is to be realized by oneself. It is not to be passed on by word of mouth. In other words, I'd like to be free from concepts. And he says, this has to be realized by you. I can't give you this freedom. You have to win this freedom from concepts. This is something you have to do by discovering your true nature. I can give you more concepts, but I can't give you that freedom. That's for you to do. Who is obtaining this self-knowledge directly? When did I happen to be? I must know about it myself, firsthand, and not from others. You are. You know you are. This is the great Lord, the sudden explosive effulgence. Surrender to it, and you will know all. It is without form or name. It is to be abided in by firm conviction. And this is where Nisargadatta is different from some of the other Advaita teachers, because he says one of the keys, not only to dwell in the I am, but to have the conviction that you are not the body, that you're consciousness itself. That's the first step. You're first at the I am. But you have the conviction you are not the body, that you are the absolute, you're even beyond consciousness. And with that conviction, you have one experience after another that tends to reinforce that conviction until ultimately you have freedom, you have an awakening experience. And this is his way. There's a heavy emphasis on concepts to end concepts, and at the same time, a direct pointing to yourself. Questioner, is there something which I can do to help myself grow, to progress? Maharaj, consciousness does not undergo any progress. Even the space cannot have any progress, and the space is number three. One is the absolute. Two is consciousness. Three is space. Where there was no knowledge, I am. That is number one, the absolute. Later on, there is the sense I am, and that is number two. Then there is space, number three. Passing the examination of the Upanishads, does it give you knowledge of the self? In other words, he's talking about your experience. Where there's no knowledge, that's the absolute. Number two is consciousness or the sense of presence. I am. And number three is the emptiness, the space that contains all of the manifestation. Now he says, does passing the examination of the Upanishads, those are the end of the Vedas, the last books of the Vedas, does this give you knowledge of the self? And the questioner says, no, it doesn't. However, it does give me something. He's holding on to the idea that the Upanishads somehow give you something. The Vedas, the learning, the book learning, the concepts the teachers give you, they mean something. They give you something. It does something. In Maharaj, he says, in my case, everything is spontaneous. That is my dharma. If the knowledgeable people come and tell me I am foolish, I will say, this foolishness is my richness, my freedom. That knowingness which has come over me, that itself is foolishness. You are a very gentle woman. If someone comes and abuses you, thinking you are a man, you will get very angry at this misunderstanding. To identify with anything, such as I am like this or that, is an abuse of your nature. So he's pointing once again, don't identify with the body. Don't identify with anything. Your true nature has nothing to do with any manifestation. Questioner, how do I lose identification with the body? This is very important. Listen to this carefully. Increase the conviction that you are the formless consciousness. You develop your firm conviction that you are the total manifestation, universal consciousness. There is nobody who can have the knowledge of the truth, the eternal. It is one's eternal true state, but it is not a knowledgeable state. You cannot know it. The so-called knowledge is boundless and plenty in the state of, well, let me see. So-called knowledge is boundless and plenty in the state of attributes I am. I have no idea what that sentence means. So-called knowledge is boundless and plenty in the state of attributes I am. I have no idea what that last sentence means, but increase the conviction that you are the formless consciousness. You develop your firm conviction that you are the total manifestation, the universal consciousness which manifests through worms and flies and cats and dogs and other people. Don't identify with your particular body. Identify with consciousness itself as a first step. There is nobody who can have the knowledge of the truth, the eternal. That is your true state. You can't have knowledge of it. That's you. But it is not a knowledgeable state. You cannot know it. And now the last part. It seems that I am more and more busy, that I don't have much time anymore for meditation. Isn't that most of us? I want instruction from Maharaj on how to come to self-realization, but he doesn't want to meditate. Maharaj says, carry on your work in the world, but your work can only take place if you are there. The sense of being must be there. That is enough. Is it necessary for me to constantly remind myself of that, to be aware of that? Maharaj says, who can be conscious of consciousness other than consciousness itself? Is there any other entity? It is there. The consciousness is always aware of itself. It is there. The consciousness is always aware of itself. The trouble is that the consciousness has identified with the body. Do nothing else except this. Do not identify the consciousness with as a body. Again, that sentence is garbled. Do nothing except this. Do not identify the consciousness with the body or as a body. In other words, you can't be aware of awareness because you're always aware of awareness. That's the nature of consciousness, is to be self-aware. But remember what your true identification is. Not with the body, but with awareness itself or consciousness itself. By doing something or not doing something, is there any change in this consciousness? There is no need to do any sadhana except be aware of the fact that it is only this consciousness that everything takes place. Relatively, you are the consciousness, and the consciousness has no form. You can only sense consciousness. You cannot see it. You can see things. You can see the manifestation. But you can't see consciousness itself. You know it. You know that you are. That knowing is a different kind of knowing. It's an intuition, an apprehension. But it's not grasped by the vision or by the mind. It's your beingness. Who directs the body to do what it does? It can only be the consciousness. There is no entity. Consciousness does whatever is to be done through the various bodies. You are that consciousness and the love of that consciousness that it has for itself. You are that consciousness and the love that consciousness has for itself. And here's the most important. Then there is really nothing in particular that you can do to realize this, and you can't try to do. Let me see. Then there is really nothing in particular that you can do to realize this, and you can't try to do nothing. It just is. That's the way. It is, and that's all. Maharaj responds, yes, just understand. Just be yourself. Just be yourself. Should one have faith in the self? The questioner asks. Once you are the self, where is the question of faith? Just be yourself. Operation is brought to a standstill. When you are that, it is finished. The circle is closed. You are yourself. You know, it's so easy to talk about, you have to transcend thought. You have to get rid of concepts. You have to get rid of societal conditioning. You have to get rid of conventional morality. You have to get used to this idea. You have to get rid of that idea. You have to do this. You have to do that. And you hear this over and over again from teachers, transcending thought, transcending ideas. But unless you get into the nitty-gritty of the ideas that are difficult to get rid of, you're not really doing anything. Now, where are some of the ideas that are current, that everybody has a problem with, that brings out all kinds of bullshit? It's not whether I am or am not, or whether karma is or is not, or whether there's predestination or not, or whether God is in the heaven or not. These aren't the questions that move us, that trap us. I couldn't care less whether there's karma or not. I couldn't care less whether the I exists or not. I couldn't care less whether I'm supposed to love all people or not. As part of this sadhana, I don't even know what the hell a sadhana is. It's a word. Meaning you fuck up beginning in the morning and you fuck up all day long. And at the end of the day, you say, oh God, I fucked up. And you're punished for it. That's sadhana. These ideas are not the ones that are hard to get rid of. These are not the ones that are going to produce freedom for you. It's going into the difficult ones that trap us in everyday life. And what are they? Basically, conventionality. Ideas about marriage. Ideas about sexuality. ideas about abortion, ideas about Social Security, ideas about Medicare, the ideas about the state and how much it's supposed to impact our life. All these ideas that grab us, especially sexuality, and of loving, who you're supposed to be allowed to love and who you're not supposed to love. I can't believe there are still people that think that if you're in a married relationship, you can't love someone from the heart outside of that relationship. It just boggles my mind that there is this thought, if you love somebody outside of a marriage or a committed relationship, you're somehow cheating or causing doing virtual adultery. My Congress of Gurus would be finished if no one was in a relationship would not be allowed to love us. And what kind of problems this causes? What kind of jealousy? What kind of pain? What kind of feeling cheated on? What kind of anger? Husbands keeping tabs on me, doing internet searches on Ed Music to find out what he's done recently. Same thing with animals. I've had threats against my life for trying to take care of animals. It gets very involved. There are cliques involved. There is a reporter for an internet newspaper who was extremely critical of a new general manager starting for Los Angeles Animal Services, we all thought would make wondrous changes for the better. And she attacked him unmercifully. And I and several others, like Mary Cummins, offended him. And because of that, we got into lots of problems with animal networks that wanted to really destroy us and did everything possible to destroy us, even threatened to attack us and to harm us. We even had police watching the street for a few days after some of these threats. So you have to know what are your limits? What are you willing to do to pursue your heart? If you think animals are going to be saved, what are your limits? What can you do? What will you do? Same thing if you're married. How much can you love outside of the marriage? How much can you love an idea, an ideal, a movement, or pursuit of the self, or loving someone outside of your marriage? Conventionality traps us into a narrow cocoon. And I'm doing this with each of you that gets close to me. It's not just words I'm talking to you about freedom. But I try to put you in situation to see how much ability you have to squirm out from your ideals or to take the heat. Robert used to do this to us all the time, put us in difficult situations to see which way we leaned. Was it towards him or was it towards ourselves? How much squirming did we do? How much pain did we feel? How much gnashing of teeth was there? How much gnashing of teeth are you doing? Trying to free yourself? Or do you just sit around all day and chant and say, I'm pursuing freedom, but do nothing else? Do you confront anyone with your truth? Your new truth? Your new hard-won truth of freedom? Or is your freedom in a box? In the corner where you sit and say, I'm free, and you stay in the corner? Or do you roar? Do you roar with your freedom? Freedom. Do you roar or do you whimper? Do you even know where your freedom is? Do you challenge your boxes that you're in? Every day that you do it, you get a little happier, a little more free, a little more breathing room. The concept of the spiritual teacher is another one. How many concepts do you have about a spiritual teacher and what they're supposed to be like? Especially the people that read Ramana. Ramana never did nothing, people say. What a perfect guru he was. The less he does, the better. He sits around and gets served all day by servants, by his devotees, and he's a great man because he does nothing. Let me tell you, if you didn't have to do anything, you sat around all day and people were putting grapes in your mouth, and so you'd be pretty happy too, and they'd be saying, what a great person. Look, she's never ruffled by anything. Well, nobody's ruffling the guru's feathers. How many people were going up and kicking sand in Ramana's face? It's easy to be the perfect guru when you're not challenged and everybody around you is a sycophant. But there's no rough and tumble at the ashram except between Ramana's brother and everybody else. Get rid of all ideas about a guru, about a teacher, about yourself. You're not a principal of a school. You're consciousness itself. You're not a housewife. You're not a human with eye problems. You're not really married to Alan. That's your body and your persona. So what are you really? Who are you? Looking deep within yourself. Dive deep into your psyche, into your body. And look for yourself. Where are you? In all of that mess inside, that consciousness, that void, that sense of presence. Where are you? Do you exist as a nucleus somewhere? Where the body's tied to the mind? Anywhere in that emptiness, is there you? You already are you. Complete. Perfect. Just don't identify with your body. Escape all concepts. When a concept presents itself or a limitation, refuse it. That's what he says. Somebody said to me very recently that for a long time I caused her complete frustration because I didn't give her anything to hold on to. No concepts, no techniques, no ideas. I just kept taking things away. That's it. I don't have anything for you. I just want to take all your bullshit away. All your prisons away. To let you know you're loved for yourself. Get rid of those ideas. You're not a human being. You're not a body, not a school teacher, not a housewife. You're consciousness itself. You're not the body. You're consciousness itself, not the body. And reading all the books in the world will not reveal this, not the Vedas. Not the Ashtavakra Gita. Not the Ribhu Gita. Or the Avadhut Gita. Or Tweedy's autobiography. Red music is satsangs. His teachings. Which I have to admit are pretty brilliant. Only you can free yourself. Look into yourself. Feel yourself. What is your base state? When you're really calm, your mind isn't rocked by ideas. When your mind is silent. Kids aren't screaming at you. Husband's not screaming at you. Wife isn't screaming at you. Boss is not screaming at you. Even the cats are not screaming at you, saying, I want to eat. When all is peaceful and said and done, what are you? What is that peace? That emptiness. That joy. What I want to give you, which is you without any impediments. Not even karma and reincarnation. Although many of us feel like we've been together for a long time, many lives. And even more than this, getting rid of concepts, the neti, neti, not this, not this. In this Sangha, there's a movement of grace. Right from Ramana, through Robert and me, from Nisargadatta through Gene Dunn and me, to you. A gift of nothingness, of emptiness. Nowhere to turn, nothing to do. Satsang, matter of fact, our entire Sangha is all about freedom, real freedom. It's about freedom, real freedom, freedom from concepts. Freedom from fear, freedom from conventionality, freedom from all ideas, to live free as yourself, truly you, the human being and the divinity, whatever combination people think of themselves, it only becomes you. You just act. Without constraint. That doesn't mean that you go on rampages and pillage and plunder. It means you free yourself from your concepts to know who you are. And you act from that state. And there's compassion, there's kindness, there's love. But while we were playing that last chant, I felt something different. I felt the descent so strongly of grace on our satsang. The energy just spilled into me, through my head and then into my body and everywhere. I felt the descent of grace. Jeff Roberts' darshan, you might say. Ramana's. And I hope it permeates all of you. It helps you identify with your true nature instead of the body. True nature is consciousness. And then there's the absolute. I really and truly love you all. Freedom. Freedom. Freedom.